We're in the middle of our series entitled The Respectable Sins. Last week we looked at spiritual pride, and today we're going to look at a sin that fuels and feeds a lot of the things that drive us. They get us. This sin feeds and fuels a lot of the messes that we find ourselves in. If you are visiting with us, though, we especially want you to know that you're our special guest. If you have a bulletin there, there's a tear-off inside. If you could just fill that out, that'd be great. And put that into the basket on your way out. And then outside the middle doors, we have a gift for you as well. And so we're glad that you're here if you're visiting with us. The thing I want to talk about is those things that drive us into leases we wish we could get out of. I want to talk about also those things that cause us and drive us to get more house than we need, that drove us to get that thing that we're not sure why we got it, but we got it, we're not sure where it is, but we still owe money on it thing. It drove you into credit card debt. And here's the thing, if we could just understand this morning, and if we could just get this, it would change everything for us. There's a lot of different ways I could have went with this message. I could have went with a general fever, but I chose to attack one area that we find ourselves the most discontent in. And that's what I want to talk to us today about, is the sin of discontentment. And I want to just drive an arrow at the heart of, especially in regards to how we spend our resources and money that God's given to each and every one of us. I want to talk about our discontentment. A definition that I ran across that I thought captures exactly what I want to share with you this morning is this. Discontentment is dissatisfaction I have with what I have. It's dissatisfaction that I have with what I have. It's dissatisfaction you have with what you have. It's related to envy. It's a cousin of envy. And the last time that I shared, we talked about envy. And the definition of envy was what? Resenting what others have. Resenting the blessings of God in other people's lives. But this half of it is simply this. Is ignoring. It's also ignoring God's blessings in my own life. And that's what I want to talk about today. Is us not seeing what God's truly given us and to be content with exactly that. This is a hard message. It's going to be hard to hear, but it's something that we all need to hear. I'm usually not dissatisfied, though, with what I have until I become aware of what I don't have. You see, comparison kills contentment. Comparison will kill your contentment every time. We see this in a powerful way in the book of Esther. If you have your Bibles, look at Esther with me. In Esther chapter 5, we see the crew of Haman, Mordecai, the king. We see Esther, and there's two guys that continually battle it out through, and it's Mordecai and Haman. Haman can't stand Mordecai, and we'll see why. Look at chapter 5, beginning in verse 11. Says, and Haman recounted to them the splendor of his riches. This guy was rich. He had it all. The number of his sons. He's saying, man, I got kids. I'm blessed. All the promotions with which the king had honored him and how he advanced him above the officials and the servants of the king. There is nobody that this guy Haman is below. But what does it say? Then Haman said, even Queen Esther, let no one but me come with the king to the feast beyond that she prepared. And tomorrow also I'm invited by her together with the king. Yet all this is worth nothing to me. It's worth nothing. And the NIV says it this way. All this gives me no satisfaction. Why? Because the guy, the Jew, Mordecai, sitting at the table. This guy immediately became discontent and dissatisfied with everything that he had been blessed with, because something that got into him. And we are not so different. We begin to say things like, you know what, one day I'll be happy when I can remodel my house. One day when I get my dream house, then I'll be happy. And happiness seems to be just right around the corner. One day when, honey, when we can travel, we'll be happy. One day when our kids are a certain age, we'll be happy. And then we just, this cycle continues, and then we're never truly content and never truly satisfied with what we have. All of this gives me no satisfaction. And as long as I see someone else have what I have, my comparison will always kill my contentment. I'm dissatisfied with what I have. And when you compare, here's the problem with it. You become aware of what you don't have. Listen to 2 Corinthians 10:12. It says, not that we dare classify or compare ourselves with some of those who are commending themselves. But when they measure themselves by one another and compare themselves with one another, they are without understanding. They're not wise. Do we understand when I begin to compare myself with all of these things and all the things that I don't have, I become dissatisfied with what I have. And the word that's going to help us this morning understand this is going to be the word awareness. This is huge in our lives. This is going to be big time for us this morning to grab this principle and understand the relationship between awareness and my dissatisfaction and my discontentment. It will open our eyes up to something that's been going on inside of you, inside of me, inside of our culture for a very long time. See, our awareness, I heard it put this way. Awareness fuels your discontentment. It is what fuels it. You're happy with what you have until you become aware of the fact that there's another one. You're happy with your house until you visit another house in another neighborhood. And you're like, whoa, you walk around that model home and you go, I had no idea ceilings could be that high. I had no idea kitchens could look like that. Look at those bathrooms. My bedroom could fit into that bathroom. Are you serious? And then you go home and what do? My ceilings feel like they're 6 feet tall. Look at my kitchen. It's ridiculous. My bathrooms. And something that you were completely satisfied with, you became discontent over. Why? Because you became aware of something else. That there was another thing to be had. It happens so easily, so quickly. See, in our culture, we have a lot of icons that represent our discontentment and awareness. Let me ask you this. How many of you, if I can get this off, oh yeah. How many of you have a TV with one of these sticking out of the back? All right, now that's spiritual pride. Put your hands down, all right? We used to be content when we went shopping for a TV to look at what this looks like, how big this was. Now we have to look at what this looks like. You know how hard this is to mount above your fireplace? It's almost impossible. But yet it's the same with everything, with clothing, shoes, appliances. We become so dissatisfied with what we have because we become aware then. My biggest disturbing is like I asked Lee, I said, Lee, hey, could we get one of those TVs or do we have to find one? He's like, no, we got several of them. Our church has these. Can you believe it? Unbelievable. Somebody's head should roll. What is wrong with us? But when we go shopping, we look at that part of the TV. And here's the thing. We went to our neighbor's house or we went to Best Buy and we're just going to buy batteries. And we stroll past the flat screens, the plaza. We didn't even know that things could be that good. And we're like, whoa. You know what we did? We went home and we immediately started doing research. How much do these things cost? How can I get one? And it's the same with everything that we become discontent with in our lives. Appliances, iPads, iPhones, every little gadget and gizmo that drives us. And there's something that gets you. I don't know, ladies, is it shoes? Is it clothing? Whatever it is that you just got to have more of. We just got to continually move forward because there was another one out there. And immediately we go into the mode of how can I get it? And it's fueled by our awareness. Our awareness that it's even out there. One of the best things that I saw, my kids, I'll tell you what, when you're preaching a message like this, you just see this thing just slither all over your family. You're like, stop it, stop saying that, knock it off. You know, that's discontentment. And you're like, ah, we're terrible. And my kids, last night, Camden, I mean, I could just go over and over a million illustrations of what my kids did to me this last week and how discontent they are, how heathen-like they are, all right? And so last night, my sons were making, he's wanting some sherbet, he's wanting something sweet, and I said, no chocolate, and he goes, Dad, can I blend up some sherbet? I'm like, blend up sherbet? And he goes, can I use the hand mixer? And the hand mixer's broken, and I'm like, no, I don't want to clean up your mess, man, knock it off. And so he gets out the hand mixer, and he starts doing it, and he's like, Dad, this is broken. You know what I'm going to buy you guys? The magic bullet. The ninja, Dad. That'll do all this and more, right? And it just fuels us. I mean, everybody knows. I mean, my junior high kid, he's like, I'm going to get you the Ginsu knives, the Flowbee. I remember my grandma. Years ago with the shopping channel, I don't even know if the shopping channel's still on, it's morphed into whatever, a billion type of channels. My grandma, 80 years old, all right? 80 years old, sitting in a recliner, had a closet full of stuff that she'll never use. But because it came on the shopping channel, she got discontent with stuff. And I remember Ron Popeil being on there, right? I mean, he would say things like, and guess what? There's, oh, there you see, you guys didn't want to say it, but you knew. Right? You can't help but to park on that thing. What? You're not going to give me one paring knife, but two? Are you serious? Call now. Immediately. Because here's what they know. That's been told for years for us in the Bible. That our appetite will never be satisfied. Our appetite for more will never be satisfied. Proverbs 27:20 says this. Sheol and Abaddon are never satisfied, and never satisfied are the eyes of man. Never. Ecclesiastes 5:10-12. He who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves wealth and his income, but this is also vanity. All right? Ecclesiastes 6:7-9. The toil of man is for his mouth, yet his appetite is never satisfied. Drop down to verse 9. Better is in the sight of the eyes than the wandering of the what? The appetite. This is also vanity and striving after the wind. It's never, ever going to be satisfied. Our appetite for more. And one of the best illustrations that I could even show you with this is a commercial that's out right now. Go ahead and roll that.
It is the newest.
Even newer.
Oh. Everything else is obsolete.
Oh, whoa, wait. Oh, 4D TV? Stupid.
You got the wrong TV, silly head.
The new buyback program. You buy it now, we buy it back when the new thing comes out.
Best Buy is genius. They market our discontentment. There's a market for our discontentment. The buyback program, sweet. It continues to fuel our cultures and our discontentment, because when the next upgrade comes and the next newest thing comes, it lasts about 3 months. We got to have the next new thing. And it gets us every time. In the old days, people replaced things. We don't use that word replace anymore, do we? We use what? Upgrade. I need to upgrade. All right? It was a computer term. Now it's become mainstream for our consumer mentality. I have to upgrade. Things don't get worn out anymore. Things don't break and we replace them. We just upgrade. We don't even let them get worn out. We upgrade them. We actually try to keep them nice so we can sell them now on what? The biggest discontentment place on earth, eBay. And it allows our discontentment to be fueled by what? Our awareness. And we fight over it. We have payments we wish we didn't have. We have marriage issues over it. And there's tension in our relationships. We have credit card debt. And it wasn't fueled by need. Last time I looked, most of us are living indoors and eating fine. It wasn't fueled by need, but it was fueled by a desire for bigger, better, faster, shinier, newer. That is the truth about our discontentment. Is that those things are all an appetite. Appetites are never fully and finally satisfied. You're never fully and finally satisfied. You don't eat a meal one day and go, you know what? Oh, that's the last meal that I'll ever have to eat. I'm done eating for the rest of my life. You may feel like that sometimes, but a few hours later, what happens? You get hungry again. Our appetites, and this goes the same way with everything that is oriented around an appetite. We're never fully and finally satisfied. What does that mean for us today? See, no matter what you have that's appetite-oriented, that's why you said, you know what, this is the last car that I'll ever need, until you drove past the newer model. Oh, they changed the shape of it. Are you kidding me? I got to have it. That newer model feature on there, you got to be kidding. I was waiting for that. And so we got to upgrade our vehicles or the houses that we go through. And we're like going, man, this house is going to take us through retirement, babe. And all of a sudden it's like, no, it won't, because we need something newer. Our appetites are never satisfied. And we begin to figure out how we can get these things. We drive out of that neighborhood and we look at the prices in between this and this. And you think, how can I, $200 more a week can get in this neighborhood, babe. Let's do it. Because it brings up that appetite that's never going to be satisfied. It seems as though the way you satisfy an appetite is by feeding it. That when you finally think that it's enough, that you've had enough, full of what we have, that to continue to feed the appetite. But the truth is, the more you feed an appetite, the bigger it gets. It's true of everything. It's true of stuff. It's true of sex. It's true of wealth. It's true of power. It's true of advancement. It's true of everything that is oriented around an appetite. The more you get, the more you want. Appetites only shrink by depriving them. I don't know if any of you have ever fasted for more than 2 days, but if you have, after about the two day mark, your hunger diminishes. And you think, mine wouldn't, right? But it does, seriously. If you've ever fasted for that long, after about day two, your hunger you still need nutrition and things like that, but that feeling, you know, at night when you think, I'm going to eat my arm off, that diminishes. That's not there anymore. Diets are similar to that. I was talking to Brad one day, and he told me, hey, listen, he had some diet. He couldn't shake some weight or something like that. And he said, here's the thing. I said, man, send me that. I need to drop about 10 pounds. And he sent me that. And it was like a whole contract. It was like, no sugar, no this, for a month. And then it had a place to sign it at the bottom. And I'm like, I'm not signing this thing. Is he crazy? No sugar? No eating after whatever. Brad's one of those disciplined people I've ever met in my life. If you want a diet for something to get rid of, go to him. He'll tell you. It'll make your hair fall out. That's why I didn't do it. See, we think if we feed it, it'll be fully and finally satisfied. But you starve an appetite. That's how you shrink it initially. Because I realize this, and you realize this, that just because I stay away from something or I isolate myself from it doesn't take care of what? Doesn't address the heart. And that's what Paul does here in 1 Timothy chapter 6, if you'll take your Bibles and turn there. With all that as a backdrop, Timothy was written to a young man by the Apostle Paul, and in this letter he addresses wealth, wealthy people, people that want to be wealthy. And in that discussion, he addresses the issue of contentment. And before we jump into that text, I want us to understand, though, that a lot of times, and the things that I'm explaining here this morning are, although discontentment can be negative, it also can be used for positive. It can also be leveraged for our benefit. A lot of you have become dissatisfied with your marriages. A lot of you have become dissatisfied with how you look. And so it caused you to make changes in your life. It caused you to make changes in your marriages. People become discontent with AIDS in the world. And it causes them to go on a crusade and say, I want to do something about that. Poverty in our world. People have done it about racism in our country. And things have been what? Changed as a result of what? Dissatisfaction. As a result of discontentment. So good things can happen. But here's the shift that we have to make this morning, that we become discontent in the right things. that we become discontent with our things that we're discontent over. That's the shift. That's what I want us to make this morning, is to make that shift. And Paul tells us exactly how to do that in 1 Timothy chapter 6. First of all, godliness is connected to contentment is great gain. Godliness combined with contentment is great gain. And in chapter 6, beginning in verse 6, it says, now there is great gain in godliness with contentment. See, great gain is in direct contrast to how we think of great gain. Great gain to us is, hey, I got rid of all of these and I replaced them with flat screens. That's great gain. Hey, my 401k is bigger and fuller. I can live till I'm 120. That's how much I've got in my 401k. That's what we think of great gain. We think, man, I got a bigger, this, nicer, cooler, shinier. That to us is great gain. And it revolves around stuff. And Paul says, let me hit pause for a second. Let me flip this on its head, because I want to redefine great gain. I want to redefine for you how we view great gain. Paul says, godliness, which is being godlike, becoming more like our Creator, and combined with contentment, which means, hey, listen, I like what you got. What you got is newer, brighter, shinier, cooler. But you know what? I'm good with what I have. Paul's saying, that's contentment. That I like yours, but I'm content with what I have. Mixed with what? Combined with godliness. See, the two go hand in hand. The two are connected. The two are fluid within one another. Paul said, gain is more than stuff. Great gain is godliness combined with contentment. And here's why this makes sense. If great gain is all about stuff, and great gain is all about things, then when I die, I've gained what? Zero. I don't have a thing to show for eternity or anything. All I've got is all this stuff that my kids are going to throw away one day in the dumpster. Great gain is different than the way that we measure it. And Paul explains this in verse 7. Why? For we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of the world. I've never seen a U-Haul in the back of a hearse. You can't take it with you. Paul wants us to begin to rethinking how we look at stuff, and the acquisition, and how the pursuit in relationship to our priorities in our life. And then he drops down in verse 8. But if we have food and clothing, with these we will be content. Did I read that right? Yeah. Okay, but if we have food and clothing, with these we will be content. Hey, oh, let's not get extreme here. That was a different culture, Andre. Paul went extreme on us, didn't he? Now, Paul said, this is normal. I don't want to get tied up with all the stuff. If I have enough food and I have something to wear, I'm good. Can you say that? Can I? That's hard. There's no hidden meaning. There's no Greek spin here. But if we have food and clothing, these things, will I be content? See, we're into progress. We're into next. We're into gain. We're driven. Let me ask you a question. When in your life were you the most content? Those of you younger, you're okay right now. Those that are older, my age, 40 and up, let me ask you, you're still not safe at 35, all right? Right now, if you're my age, probably, you're probably living better than you've ever lived. You're driving better than you've ever driven. You have more than you've ever had, period. But are you more content? Most people I ask that question to, and I say, when were you the most content? You know what everybody sits down and starts reminiscing about? When they had nothing. When they had the least amount. When they just got married and just out of college. I remember I walked onto the island of Guam. We had no debt. I had $1,300 to my name to buy a car. and not even my first paycheck yet. We had nothing, but we were happy. We didn't have a lot of complications in life. Just had to figure out how I could get a car for $1,300. You had to get a boonie car. That's what we called them. With food and clothing, these will be content. See, here's what happens when we get older. And those of you that are younger, learn from this. You feed your appetite of bigger, better, newer. And all of a sudden, what happens to an appetite when you feed it? It gets bigger. It doesn't diminish. And so those of us that have fed this appetite of bigger, better, faster, newer, we're in things that we can't afford. We've bought into the lie. Because here's what it says. Verse 9. But those who desire to be rich, those who want to live richly, will fall into temptation and into a trap, into a snare. Those who want to be driven to drive better, driven to live better, driven to vacation better, driven to eat better, driven to dress better, driven to school better. Those who want bigger, better, more fall into a trap. Those who want to advance their lifestyle to live richer will eventually fall into this trap. Everybody here with a credit card balance wanted to live richer, fell into this trap. Everybody in America that has a mortgage that they can't pay for, not because of loss of income, but because they made a poor decision, wanted to live richer, and they fell into the trap. Nothing wrong with that, but Paul says when this is the driving motivator in your life as it relates particularly to our finances, we'll fall into that trap. And some people are trapped into a lease. They hate the car because they hate the lease, but because if they pay just a couple hundred more dollars, they could drive something awesome. And now they regret it. The things that surprise us most, and it shouldn't surprise us because of this principle right here, is when we hear of ex-NFL players or NBA players or people that win the lottery and they're filing for bankruptcy. Why? Because of this. They fell into the trap and thinking that this is going to satisfy everything. And they throw it down that hole and they keep throwing it and they keep throwing it. And it'll never, ever satisfy. Second part of verse 9. Here's the point of this. Discontentment is dangerous. Say that with me. Discontentment is dangerous. Look what it says. Into a snare and into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. If we allow this appetite in us, whether we're poor, whether we're high class, middle class, upper middle class, lower middle class, we need to understand that it is a dangerous thing. And if our orientation is just, I have to have more and live richly, you're going to fall into the trap. Why? Look at verse 10. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evils. If I were to ask you one-on-one right now today, if we were to sit down and I were to say to you, do you love money? We'd go, Andre, come on. I don't love money. I like it. I'm infatuated with it. All right, we're dating. We're together. I really, really, really like money. I don't love it, though. See, here's the thing. Love of money and these sins that we're talking about fly under the radar. Hard to see in the mirror. Very hard to see. And this is why we're trying to bring these out. And should a big old spotlight on them. Put a big old spotlight on them and let them just run around and then we're like, that's ugly. That's sick. Yeah. Do you love money? Do you remember when you were dating a person that you were going to marry? Or maybe you're dating someone right now and you're just madly in love. Do you remember the stupid, crazy things you'd do because you were in love? I remember my wife and I would drive hundreds of miles just to meet each other for breakfast and then go back to where we were. You're thinking, that's crazy. That's stupid. Would I do that today? Yeah. Do that. She's worth it. You bet. She's not in here. She was in first hour. But you can tell her. I mean, people do stupid things, do crazy things when they're in love. They stay up all hours of the night talking to them, I love you. I know it's 4 a.m. and I got to work in 2 hours, but you're worth it. No. I mean, it's worth it, but yeah, you just do those things when you're in love. Let me ask you this. Have you ever done anything stupid to get something that you wanted? How long did it take for you to convince yourself that you could get into that lease? How long did it take for you to convince yourself that I could upgrade that? How long did it take for you to research and think, how can I get that? Not long. Not long. And you look back on that purchase and you think, that was really, really stupid. That was really, really dumb. And you say, why did I do it? It's because you were in love with money. You're in love with a car. You're in love with a thing. You're in love with a computer. You're in love with a phone. And you say, no, I didn't love it. Yeah, you did. When you jeopardize things and sacrifice things that you know are more important, that's how you know that you're in love with money. That's how our culture defines it. That when I'm willing to sacrifice things to get it, I'm in love with it. Because look at the rest of the verse. The love of money is the root of all evil. When you look at percentages of marriages falling apart, money's pretty high up there. When you see businesses go under, usually it's a guy who's been dissatisfied with what he's got, with where his location is, and makes a bad decision financially, and they go under. See, we're not immune to this. This is stuff that we think of every day, where I go out to eat, how I live, what I buy, how can I get by, how can I get it? Because I'm what? Dissatisfied with what I currently have. Never more do I see that than when you have young children. Because they continually want the next thing, continually want. And you see it in yourself and you see it in them. Because they just can't have an iPod. Then they got to get an iPod Touch. And then, Dad, you have an iPhone, so why can't I have an iPhone? It just doesn't stop. And we feed it. And it says this. It's through this craving. The dissatisfaction that is driving this. It's through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows, with many pains. Here's the point. If you don't get a handle on discontentment, it's dangerous. And it only will wreck your relationships. It has the potential to wreck your relationship with God. Because there are some of you that are in here that have just kind of wandered back into church. And the thing that kept you away from church wasn't doctrine, wasn't philosophy, wasn't something else that we always like to name. But it was because our stuff distracted us. And we realized that the great gain that we thought we had by chasing and pursuing it wasn't that much a great gain. And we're back to reorient our priorities. See, it was predicted of you 2,000 years ago when this was written. It's the nature of falling in love with stuff and the acquisition of it. But here's the hinge. Here's the part I really want us to get. But as for you, verse 11. But as for you, O man of God, flee these things. See, but as for you, it doesn't have to be this way. You don't have to live this way. You can redirect your passions. See, Paul's brilliant here. On the way that we can leverage our own dissatisfaction for our own benefit. To grow and change through this. But you, O man of God, what does he say? Flee. Flee. Don't flirt with it. Don't play around with it. Don't be careful around it. If I were to get into a cage with a lion and say, listen, I'm just going to be careful. Are you a fool? Paul says what? Flee. Run from it. Because it's what? Dangerous. It's so dangerous that we're saying, don't even stick around. Don't entertain it. Don't click on it. Run. because it's taken many down and many away from their faith. See, here's the great thing about all of this, is that Paul doesn't leave us, though, with saying, take it away, remove it, flee, run. But there's something to run to. In Ephesians chapter 4, it says what? Put off, and then put what? Put on. And Paul uses the same concept here. He says, and pursue. Flee these things and pursue. I want you to change your direction, he's saying. I want you to change your pursuit. I want you to be less aware of something and more aware of something else. I want you to grow through this. I want you to follow and pursue righteousness, right living before God, with a conscience that's clean before him, a pure life, a life that is void of sin, a life that is tender to how he wants us to live. He says godliness, living the way Christ would have lived when he was on this earth. Faith, follow faith, trusting God. One of the things that discontentment robs us of is our trust in a heavenly Father to provide things for us. Because let's face it, most of us don't have a lot of needs. We can go out and buy what we want. We don't have to say, God, we need this. We just go and buy it. When's the last time we truly just trusted God? Love. Follow after what? Love. Pursue love. What's the essence of that? Not looking at myself and what I need, but what? What others need. Huge shift. Steadfastness, sticking in there, gentleness. And that's more than just being content and gritting through contentment. I'm content, but you know what? I'm content, yeah. Well, you're going to be fun to be around. There's gentleness about somebody who lives a life of contentment. In other words, instead of pursuing stuff, pursue something else. And instead of taking your time to drift down the mall, do something else with it. Instead of being dissatisfied with how I live, where I live, and my standard of living, be dissatisfied with my knowledge of the Word of God. Be dissatisfied and discontent that I don't have intimacy with God. The fact that I pull my family out of church regularly for the pursuit of these things. He said if we would just begin to pursue something different, because in our pursuit of something different, we'd become aware of other things that are truly things that we should be discontent over as it relates to our pursuit of stuff. And here's the thing, number four, as we close. As I starve my sinful dissatisfaction, I must now feed new holy appetites and redirect my pursuits as I become aware of the need of others around me. 1 Timothy 6, drop down to verse 18 with me. So how do I flip this, Andre? Well, here you go. 1 Timothy 6, 18 through 21. They are to what? Do good and be rich in good works. Go volunteer somewhere. Become aware of other things other than the pursuits that you're chasing after and the things that you're saving for. A lot of times what we'll do is we'll go to a car lot or whatever. I think I can, you know, we rework our finances. I can afford that $200 extra a month. Here's what you've just done. You've just realized you've got margin for $200 more. Rather than go buying an upgrade on something, why don't you find someone in need and give that money away? Find something greater to be able to give it toward. I'm amazed the things that we'll do when we get more margin within our finances. We immediately eat it up rather than redirect our pursuits, rather than redirecting our passions, rather than becoming aware of things that we're not aware of. And as our awareness changes, our dissatisfaction in the things that we're discontent over changes. And that's Paul's point here. How many of you guys ever watched the show Secret Millionaire? Anybody? I think it comes on Sunday nights. Pretty cool show. My wife watches it, and because Sunday night football's not on anymore, right? I mean, I'll let her watch it. Oh, hon, that's great. That's fine. All right. And she watches this. But here's what I watch. I watch the transformation of the millionaire. I see this guy, yeah, I got 3 beach houses, I got this, I got that. Now we're going to go put you on Skid Row downtown L.A. At first, he's scared to death. But all of a sudden, what does he do? He becomes aware of needs that he would have never become aware of before. And then at the end, he's willing to give away $100,000 of his own money. And none of them go, none of these people are deserving of it. You know what he did? He became aware that, you know what? I've got all this stuff. I don't need all this stuff. What's going to be more profitable at this point right now? Because I've become aware of this homeless situation or these people or this organization, I'm going to give it away. And you can see this guy. And I, you know, whether or not, you know, there's God in any of that, these people became aware. And that's what we've got to do. I remember one of our staff members was walking down the hall. It was late, going into late last week as I'm studying for this. And I said, what are you still doing here? He's like, well, we're getting ready to go to Fairhaven Mission. I went right on. I said, man, I said, if you've never been, it'll change you. It'll change a lot for you. How you view homeless, how you view yourself, how you view what you have. You become aware when you begin to serve other people and their needs. Redirect those passions. Do good. Be rich in what? Good works. And then it says to be generous and ready to share. To be generous and ready to share. Here's the problem when I buy new stuff. When I buy new stuff, I am less likely to share my new stuff. If you want this, you can have it. Right? But you want to borrow my new? No. Whoa. Nah, I'm not sure. That's brand. Whoa, don't scratch that. Hey, look how you're handling that. When it's new, it's like, no, don't touch that. I'll never forget when I first got an iPhone years ago. I got it, and my kids wanted it. No, you're not touching it. Now I can't even find it half the time. Because it's not as new. To be generous. I'm generous with that. Wait till I get the new one. I'm not going to share that. He says, I want you to be willing to share. Verse 19, thus storing up treasure for themselves as a good foundation for the future so that they may take hold, which is truly life. This is the point right here. If you get nothing else, he says, if you go with the flow of culture and you grab everything you can, and you take hold of something that you think is life, that you've been sold as life, that you've been told over the airwaves and over everywhere else that this is life. It's not life. It's valueless. And the things that we pursue after and the things that we accumulate, bigger, better, newer, shinier, we realize they don't hold any value compared to what is truly life. What is truly life? It's when we become aware of something different, when we change our pursuit, when we change our habits, that'll change our sense of discontentment over what we're content over and discontent over, that we redirect what we're discontent about, and that we come to the place and realize that I have less, but I'm so much more content. And then I can give my time and extra to others. The more content I become, and here's the thing, I become less disturbed with what I don't have. See, that's the power of this principle right here. That if I begin to chase after what is truly life, it is so much more satisfying. A life lived for God is so much more satisfying than a life lived for myself and my pursuits, what I want. Please don't get me wrong, though. I understand. We live in a world of stuff. We just can't let it control us. We can use it. There's no doubt. But the more I see it, the more we're obsessed with newer, better, bigger. It's this awareness. And if all of you are as aware as that you don't have what you don't have, it's going to fuel this discontentment. It's going to fuel your spending. It's going to fuel your debt. Your unhappiness, because it's an appetite that'll never be satisfied. Don't fall in love with bigger, better, faster, newer. Fall in love with what? God. Fall in love with the pursuit of God. Follow hard after God. That's what he wants from us. He wants us to follow him. Trust him. Love others around us the same way we would love ourselves. That's what he wants from us. Because here's the thing. At some point, there's got to be this collision for us. And I pray it's this morning, to where I sit there and I look at what I'm discontent over, of that I want more of this. And then here's what God is discontent over, that God desires for me, discontent with how much I read my Bible, how much I pray, that this collision, and I get a new discontentment, and I begin to fuel it by the things of God, not by my own desires, wants, wishes, needs for bigger, better, faster, newer. See, because most of us could easily live better. Most of us could easily drive better. Most of us could easily vacation better. But here's what I want us to come to. I want us to come to this, that because I am so aware of what God is doing in my community and my neighbors and what God's doing in my church and what God's doing around the world, that how could I ever just take all of the resources and all the money and all the stuff that God's allowed me to have and squander it on myself and chase after the pursuits and the things that are not truly life. That's where we need to come to. That we are so dissatisfied with our discontentment, that we're disgusted with our discontentment, that we follow and it changes what we're discontent over. Matthew 5:6 says this: "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be satisfied." And here's the kicker. Paul doesn't say that this is an add-on to your Christian life. This isn't just another piece of the pie for you just to think about. He says this is your standard of living as a believer. This is how we should live our lives every day, not just contemplate it on a Sunday afternoon after a message, not just this week, but he says this is supposed to reorient everything in your life. I am not standing up here saying, man, I got this all taken care of. I know how much stuff has a strangle on one of your pastors. It's hard. And this week, God's beat me up good. And I'm grateful for it. I'm so grateful. Half the topics that Brad gives me, I'm like, are you kidding me? And God does an incredible work in my own heart as a result of it. And at the end, I'm always so grateful. It's always the hard things that are going to make the biggest difference in our life. And this is one of those hard things. Let me ask you a few questions as we close. What creates the most discontentment in you? Is it generally walking through the mall, going to that furniture store, browsing through the models' homes? What is it that creates the most discontentment in you? Let me ask you this on top of that. How can you become less aware? How can you become less aware? Maybe it means cancel subscription. Surf the net less. Cancel this. Don't get on over here. Become aware of those things that fuel your discontentment and how we shift our awareness. What can you do this week to become more aware of what someone else doesn't have? Less of what you don't have, but more of what other people don't have, and to the point that it bothers you. See, this is something about discontentment. This has got to bother you in order for you to change. You've got to be able to say, man, I am discontent with my discontentment. Find someone in need to the point to where it bothers you. I have moments weekly that I look, that I see, that I'm like, I am disturbed by what I saw. You know what? We ought to be moved. We ought to be moved by the things we see that cause us to do something. What should you become more discontent over in your life? What about your spiritual life? What about that list that we talked about in 1 Timothy that we would pursue after? What if we started coming to church more than once a month? What if we got into a small group? What if we said, you know what? I need to be baptized. I need to take the next step in my obedience. And I'm going to go to that baptism class. You know what? I'm going to become a member. How can I become a member of this church? I'm dissatisfied with my involvement. How can I be more in tune and become more discontent in my life over the things that are going to be truly life? I want to be discontent over my prayer life. I want to pray more. I want to be discontent over how much I read the Bible. I want to read the Bible more. I want to be more like Christ. I'm going to give attention to the things that are going to matter most. How about you? Will you do that this week? Let's pray. Father, thank you for your word. Thank you how it directs and pinpoints and arrows right where we're at. And Father, this principle hit me very, very hard. Father, help stuff not to have a hold on me. Help me to be content with what you've given me, with food, with the clothes on my back, the people that are here in my life. Help me, Father, to be content. Help me not to be driven towards more, towards newer, towards better. But Lord, help me to shift my discontent, that I'm discontent over the things that you would rather have me be discontent over. Change us through your word. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.